Welcome to part two of our interview with Janie Brooks Hoik of Brooks Winery. Now at 16, Pascal maybe has the occasional moment to imbibe, I imagine, with certain degree of being careful. Does he spend any time in the cellar? Is he involved? What's his role at 16?
You know, he lives with his mother in Pennsylvania, actually. They just arrived at my house yesterday, so he's actually here.
Oh, great.
But he comes out for the summers with me and my kids in Amity, and then he always comes out for harvest. So during the summers, he'll be in the tasting room. He'll help Chris with different projects around the winery. He always helps bottle. You know, in harvest time, he obviously is helping with harvest, sorting fruit, and whatever kind of needs to be done, cleaning bins. And he goes back and forth a little bit between what he wants to do. You know, when I decided to continue the winery, that was my choice. Mm-hmm. Never with pressure to him that this would be something that he would have to do at some point. We would love to see him continue the business at some point. It's something right now that is overwhelming for him to think about in a lot of ways. We want him just to go be a 16-year-old kid. He's, you know, a junior in high school. He's going to go to college. He can major in whatever he wants to major in. If he decides that he wants to be in the wine business, we will, you know, ship him out to our peers in other countries and other wineries throughout the world so that he can get some hands-on experience long before he ever comes to Brooks. So we'll see how his road goes. There's days where it sounds like it's what he wants to do, and there's days where it sounds like he wants to do something else. And as long as he's a happy kid, it's all fine with me. But the winery will be there for him should he want it.
I think, well, number one, you give me two thoughts, is that if he's worked on the bottling line, he must like it to some degree, because from what I've heard, the bottling line is not a lot of fun.
Well, we bottled 4,000 cases of Pinot Noir in 2 or 3 days this summer, and I had a couple people come up to me afterwards and say, Pascal's not sure he wants to do this for a living. So, yeah, I mean, he sees what goes into what we're doing. I mean, he knows how much I work, he knows how much Chris works, and appreciates it completely. But plays an appropriate role for a 16-year-old right now.
Sure, I understand that. I think, though, also your idea of if and when he makes the decision to continue the business or whatever might happen, the idea of shipping him off to these other places, boy, you really, I can hear you've come a long way yourself in your own wine education and what you've learned for a business you knew virtually nothing about back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's just so many different ways to approach winemaking. I would want him to see a great representation across the board of working with different varietals, working with people who make pure wines, working with people who don't make pure wines. You know, working in the different geographic locations and the vineyards, and so that he would have an understanding and an appreciation for why we do things the way that we do.
Sure. That's great. Well, I hope he does. I think that'd be quite a tribute again to his dad.
Yeah. Whenever I talk about him having this, you know, experience with all these other wineries, our winemaker always says to me, when do I get to go to other wineries for 5 years?
I'll bet.
So when Pascal takes over, then you can go to other wineries and make wine for 5 years.
Have you had any of that experience yourself? Have you gone to other areas to just see what other folks are doing?
You know, I really haven't. I live in California full time. Yeah, this is where my family and my life was before my brother passed away, and so I'm actually back and forth a lot. So I've had quite a bit of visiting in Oregon, but really have not had the time to go to other regions at this point.
What part of California do you live in?
We're in the Monterey area.
Okay, so you're still in wine country, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever just kind of compare notes? I mean, because that's also some pretty reasonable Pinot area.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And I know a lot of the people here since I do live here, and do the same with, you know, with my peers up in Oregon.
So just to get some kind of an idea, I mean, maybe how many weeks of a year are you in Amity?
I'm up there at least once a month. I'm up there all summer, so two and a half months. And then I spend almost 2 months a week on the road selling wine.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're not a pilot, are you?
I wish I was.
Yeah, I'll bet.
No, I'm a Southwest Airlines A-list member.
I bet you are. How many miles is that from where you are to the winery?
You know, it takes me 7 hours door-to-door to fly because it's, you know, a good hour and a half to drive. It's an hour drive on the other end. If I was just to drive to Amity, it would be 12 hours from here.
Well, it's almost like a horse apiece some days, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you fly into Portland then?
Yes.
Okay. And you may have said this, and forgive me if I missed this. Your husband's involved in the business or he's not?
My husband is a gigantic supporter of me being in the business. But no, he's in the hospitality industry.
Well, that's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
As far as availability for Brooks Wines around the country, where can we find your wines?
We're in almost all of the major markets. We're in about 20 different states. You will find them more often in restaurants than you will in retail. You know, we don't have that large of a production. New York is our largest market, followed by California and Oregon and Chicago.
So, obviously, we've talked about the Pinot Noir and we've talked about the Riesling. I have a note here about Sangiovese.
Well, what happens with many winemakers, especially somebody like Chris, who is so committed to making wines the way that he learned from Jimmy's philosophy, he got a little bit of an itch that he wanted to design his own label and make some of his own wine. And one of the things that we agreed on early on when he did that was that he would produce varietals that Brooks does not produce. And so he makes both a dry Muscat, and then once in 2006, he made a little bit of Sangiovese.
Then he hasn't gone back to it, huh?
No, it's not something that's very easy to source.
That was going to be my next question, is where would he be? Is he sourcing it from somewhere in that area?
From Del Rio Vineyard down in southern Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, most of those other varietals are grown in southern Oregon or in the Columbia River Gorge where it's warmer.
I got to believe that you're pretty excited. At this point in time, I mean, heading into the year 2013, Oregon has become such a major wine-producing state, not just in terms of producing, but producing very high-quality wines. And your brother was kind of there at a very pivotal time.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be exciting.
It's really exciting. And I feel like I've been, swimming upstream for a number of years and feel like we finally are at the point where we have enough markets. We've leveled off production. We have a good feeling for who we are. We've been in the same space for 4 years. Chris and I have had 9 harvests together. So the ability to start focusing on, direct-to-consumer business is a larger part of what we're going to do next year, and really getting the Oregon name continued out there. I mean, it's happening more and more for sure, but we still have a ways to go.
So I'm assuming you do have a wine club then?
We do. We have 200 members in our wine club, and we have 4 different programs. You know, we try to be as flexible as possible. We have a reds-only program, we have a whites-only program, and then we have 2 that are red and white.
Which is very popular, obviously, because there are those folks that don't quite want to make the leap yet, do they?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And we have, a couple good parties a year, and it's really a fun, fun part of our business.
That's nice.
But, it's funny because when you were talking about styles, I mean, we make one wine called Rostabon, and Jimmy made it for the first time in 2003, and it was because he got this fruit from Montazzi Vineyard that he thought was just so huge that if he tried to put it in our other 3 labels, it would have changed the style of the wine, and he didn't want to do that. So he started the 4th label, so we've continued it, no more than 300 cases. And it's kind of always the biggest fruit Chris can find in the cellar. And so he puts it in more new French oak. And all my cab lovers love that wine.
Nice.
It's kind of their beginning segue into Pinot Noir.
And that's kind of what it is. You have to take it in your own time, don't you? You have to grow into it. It's not something you can force yourself to get into.
And it's interesting because our house style, the Janus and our single vineyards, and those are definitely much more kind of Burgundian in style, more old world in style. And so the Rostabon really sticks out. And we even have the Parker reviewer this year. He just, why do you make that wine? Why do you make the Rostabon? And there's an audience for it.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And many of the wineries in Oregon make 5 wines like that and don't make a more Burgundian style, but, we're the opposite. But you need to, we got to make something for everybody.
I agree. I think some people just have to tiptoe into different areas. Talking about your Pinots, my impression is that your style is more Burgundian, especially when it comes to alcohol levels.
We definitely strive for the lowest alcohol that we can have, higher acid, and great food wine. So they definitely tend, our house style tends to be more Burgundian, if you will. This last harvest, 2012, was one of those that really puts our winemaker in a quandary for what he's trying to shoot for every year. And it was one of those years where the bricks were getting up there in terms of, you know, telling you that your alcohol was going to be higher and higher and higher, but the flavor development wasn't there when he tasted the fruit. And so his whole balance of how much longer does he let it hang for flavor development versus picking so that he can manage the alcohol levels was a real challenge.
It's kind of a crapshoot sometimes, isn't it?
It is, but for us, you know, because we don't manipulate the wines, it gets back to the flavor profile of the fruit.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of California, 2011, rainy season, tough year. 2012, everybody I've talked to, it was absolute perfection. How about in Oregon?
It was definitely an easier year than 10 and 11 were in terms of your choice on when you picked. But I do think a lot of people ran into the same situation we did, where your bricks were just starting to move upward to where your hand was a little bit more forced to pick maybe sooner than you wanted to for flavor development.
So you did pick a little earlier this year is what you're saying.
We didn't. But I think, you know, had Chris had the ability to let things hang even longer, he probably would have.
Mm-hmm.
But we will not turn around and produce a whole bunch of 14.5% plus alcohol peanuts.
That's great. I like your attitude towards alcohol because, again, too many times people are so alcohol heavy, they forget that that's not really what you want in a fine wine.
No.
Anything you'd like to bring up that I haven't talked about?
We will be moving to a new space. We are currently leasing the facility that we're in, and it is sized to make about 3,000 cases.
Wow.
We made 13,000 in it in 2011 and then 10,000 this year. And I call Chris the Space Master because it's amazing how he can move all that equipment and manage production in such a tiny space. But we, about a quarter of a mile from the winery, we have our farmhouse property that's adjacent to our 20-acre vineyard. And we're going to be building a new building there. We're hoping to break ground this spring to have it ready in time for the 2014 harvest.
That's great. That's got to be pretty exciting because it'll make life a little bit easier. It's going to be one of those moments you're not going to be quite sure what to do with it, right?
Well, I want it to be complete. And what I realized when my landlord came to me one day and said he was thinking about selling the building, I kind of went, oh, boy.
Yeah,
we've just spent years establishing ourselves up here on this hill. And we're kind of off the beaten path, so there's not like there's another winery next door that we could possibly move into at some point. So it will be really nice that we have our own vineyard and our own winery space, and Chris has ample storage because I can't imagine what percentage of his time he spends just moving things around.
Yeah, right. He's got to be an expert with a forklift.
Oh, he is. He is.
So that's got to be pretty exciting to be able to have this new space. Plus, this will be on your own property, so it's yours. It's not anybody else's.
Yeah, our own space, and, you know, it's been all designed. We're all kind of ready to go. Pretty simple from a winery standpoint. I mean, it'll have the right different levels and the whole gravity flow. But what's really going to be character to it is the tasting room, and the view that we have is one of the best over the Willamette Valley, and that will be kind of the cozy, comfortable self that we are, that people appreciate in our tasting room.
Well, obviously, you're growing. Again, you told me you're making 10,000 cases, and that sounds like that's a quantity that fluctuates. But it sounds to me like business has been pretty good for you.
Yeah, business has been great. We've been very lucky to have partnerships that my brother established many, many years ago. And many of those markets, Chicago and Oregon, have really just continued to support us kind of without stop. I was just looking at some of my numbers back to 2004, and in the years when I didn't know what I was doing, they were doing a great job outselling my wine for me.
Wow, you gotta like that.
And you know, any of them I could call any day and ask a stupid question, you know, something that I should know the answer to, and the winemakers as well. And they are always there for me and supportive, and it's an amazing community.
You know, Janie, you're a prime example of great people in the wine industry, the fact that you give credit to so many people and you've got that spirit of entrepreneurship as well as the fact that you understand the whole cooperation thing.
Well, I still thank, and we just did our newsletter that I do once a year that goes out snail mail, But I thanked the 12 winemakers that came to me in 2004 and offered to take our fruit and make our wine for free, because they could have just as easily come to me and said, we're going to take his fruit, we'll keep it, you can shut this thing down. And I probably would have said okay.
Mm.
And that was not their vision for, you know, I really give them credit for the vision of keeping it going. And then when I talked to, you know, a couple of my distributors and asked them, should I keep this thing going, they all said yes.
Nice.
And, you know, had they not, I'm not sure I would have done it.
Sure.
But I'm very, 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 very glad that I have.
And what a great tribute to your brother, Jimmy.
Oh, he's, you know, I run into people all the time now that knew him. So it's been really good for me.
That's great. So for our listeners who would like to learn a little bit more about Brooks Wines, how would they find out about you online?
We have a very comprehensive website at www.brookswines.com, where they can come visit us.
And they would probably fly into, as you said, Portland, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, flying into Portland. And there's a great way to get to our winery down Interstate 5 where you don't have to go through the rest of wine country. And those directions are on our website. Our tasting room's open now year-round.
And if they would like to call the winery, what would that number be?
It's 503-435-1278.
Great. Janie, this has been a real pleasure talking to you. I admire what you're doing. So best of luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Find out more about Brooks Wines by visiting brookswine.com. Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Our intern is Ray Spears. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2012.